This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.
Hello friends, welcome to Inside Commodity Futures. I'm John Payne, I'm soon joined by Craig Turner. We're both market advisors here at Daniels Trading in Chicago. Just kind of thank you for joining us on this weekly podcast to discuss what's going on in the futures markets, specifically agriculture and the macro markets. So before we bring Craig in, I just want to touch base on where we've been over the last week since we did this podcast last Wednesday. Beans are up 20 cents, wheat up 7 cents, corn up 7 cents, crude oil up about $2.50, and the stock market up about 50 points from where we talked last time. So, Craig, as I bring you on here, we got a little bit of a turnaround. Bulls, mid-February, maybe feeling a little bit better about where they were, or better now than where they were, say, a month ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you said it right there with the weekly change in the prices. If you look at, let's say, I'm looking at December corn right now, or tar December corn, looks like a little bit of a bottoming action, you know, over, you know, the course of the past week. I don't know if that means we've, you know, had the lows, you know, in for the year, but there's definitely been some buying support. And now that, you know, December corn is closed above 389, or at 389, that's technically bullish. We could see some, we can see some of the funds come in here, especially the short-term program traders come here and buy this and see if we go up to 395 or 4. So that's been encouraging. And I know me and you've been, I know I've been a broken record of being bearish on grains, but it's been nice to see the upturn in corn, and also same with beans. You know, November beans last week, you know, we're at, you know, we almost touched 875. Now we're at 892. We can make a run at $9 here. I know I've heard you speak and said, you know, even if you break through nine, you can even go higher. So it's nice to have a bullish talking point in the grains for a change.
Yeah, not a lot of news to really focus on why it's moving. I think you could attribute it to a big short position, you know, on both sides. To short, you want some sort of bullish or bearish fundamental news. We're not getting much of that. Next report we'll see as far as data goes will be the March WASDE. CONAB, this Brazilian firm authority down there, they'll be talking about their yields. Have seen a little bit of you know, some talking up of production numbers. You know, if you had been listening to us for a while, say mid-January, we were talking about some dry spells in the northern part of Brazil, but those seem to have kind of ironed themselves out with some late moisture. And, you know, you look at where we are now for the U.S. production numbers, we'll find out in a week with the ag form. So I think those are the two kind of, you know, grain points or the grain data points that we'll look at. WASDE coming out that second week in March, and a week from today, or I'm sorry, tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Thursday, you'll be getting the U.S. acres number, so you and I can now prognosticate about total production as we move forward.
Absolutely, and just so our listeners know, a lot of times you can figure out what the yield is going to be going into that ag form because they use the trend line yields. I don't have them in front of me, but you'll probably see those numbers thrown out a lot. I think for corn, it would be like around 167, 168.
Yep.
And for beans, it probably – okay, and then the beans would be probably around – I would think around 46.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the trend lines, and there's no – there's rarely surprises in the ag form on that front. Usually the industry gets it down to a tenth of a bushel from where from they're going to be. But where the surprises can come in is on the acres. And there is a lot of variability about, you know, will there be more corn? Will there be no more beans or less of it? And that's what I'm probably going to be most excited about, you know, as you're going to start talking about new crop, is what's the USDA first thought on what the acres are going to be?
What's your thought?
I'm thinking corn is at 90 and and beans, what do we have last year in beans? 83?
83 and some change.
You know, I think we see 84 in beans because we're losing some wheat, right?
Yep.
But a lot of that, maybe that's just double crop wheat that's just going to be in beans anyways.
Sure.
And then what were we with corn last year? Was it 89?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's just a little below 90. I'm going to say 90 corn, 84 beans. You know, just because we lost, 2.5 million acres in wheat, that'll go to some other crops. And from people I talk to, just a lot of farmers I talk to, a lot of them are just, you know, staying the same. So, as what they did last year in terms of like rotation. Have you heard anything different?
No, nothing different. I think those numbers are pretty much right on. It's interesting. You know, you and I both talk to farmers all the time, and you know, we're in this environment where it seems like if you talk to them, nobody's making money.
No.
But at the same time, we're planting record number. So this will be, I think on total planted acres, will be a little bit lower when you throw in the three row crops of wheat, but it'll be darn near close to where we were 2 years ago.
Yeah.
With a total number in the, you know, the 170 or the 180, 180 million acre level for total planted acres. And that doesn't scream, you know, the end of times. That said, you're seeing the same type of action in crude oil where with interest rates being low, folks can string out losses and essentially produce at a loss longer. So, you know, anybody's guess as far as what the acreage will be down the road. But if you listen to farmers, you would think that it makes no sense to plant because we're all planting at a loss. But if you follow their actions, it's quite the contrary.
Yeah. Well, and if they own the land, they're planting. You know, right. if they're leasing it, a lot of them are still planting. I've heard a few instances where guys didn't rent or lease as much land because they just couldn't get the financing for it. I have not heard a lot of those stories. It's actually, you know, it's been small. So I don't know. I mean, what I've been writing about for the past couple of months is I thought acres had the potential to be smaller this year because there would be financing issues. And that might not turn out to be the case. You know, as you were just saying, John, we might come in pretty much the same as we have, you know, for total acres last year and the year before.
Yeah, I mean, think on the crop insurance prices so far. I think we're sitting right around the 390 level, 388, 387, something. I think that was the average for crop insurance this year, where we did closer to, 417 a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And on soybeans, probably about 50, 60 cents lower than where we were a year ago. So folks aren't getting insured as well yet. You're seeing some inputs come down. So one of the gentlemen who you and I know, his name's Andrew Ward. He works for Lansing Grain, a really, really smart guy. He'll be quick to say, you know, you can't just take price into consideration because as the cost curves fall, you know, folks may be making more money at these prices. So, you know, production will win out on that. But shorter term, when you look at what folks are planning to do, it doesn't look like to me that we're going to do anything differently for the summer row crops.
Right, because as you alluded to, that inputs come down, you know, the margins get smaller for everybody. So if the farmer feels it first with prices being lower, and then throughout that supply chain, whether it be chemicals, seed, labor, equipment, those prices tend to come down a little bit also. So everyone kind of tightens the belt and their profit margins get lower. So at the end, I mean, really the person who's producing the crop can be profitable. And that's, you know, it's not, no one's doing that at all, you know, some kind of kumbaya, you know, like, you know, let's all get to be a profitable business again. But that's just the market at work.
Absolutely. And so right now, looking at where corn is, I mean, we're sitting, it feels decent as far as the rally goes. You're looking at what will be now the May contract will be front month after next week, trading just around the 370 level. It's kind of a Groundhog's Day type of price. We feel like I've been stuck between 380 and 360 on these front month prices for over a year now. Technically, you know, 380 still feels to me like it's a real heavy level. To get above that, you're probably going to need some U.S. weather. We're starting to hear talk now of, you know, what the El Nino and La Nina cycle looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And for those bulls out there who are thinking we were going to see a drought mid-year, it doesn't appear that way. You and I are both not weather experts, but we can kind of read the tea leaves as far as what folks are saying. And I think from what I've read is the La Nina effects are going to kick in maybe back towards the end of the harvest or I'm sorry, the end of the growing season, and leave the first part of the year relatively dry but cool. So that might be welcome for planting on time.
Yeah. John and I get a lot of weather reports, and I think a month or two ago there was a lot of speculation that we could have a La Nina event during the summer, during critical growing periods, and even saw some of the analysts and newsletter writers out there talk about $5 and $6 corn if XYZ should happen. But it seems like in the past few weeks, a lot of those weather services have been walking that back and saying it's more likely that if we do get La Nina, it would be during the fall. After the most critical time. So if that's the case, if I think at one point we were looking at the odds of La Nina what the weather service was saying was 50-50 it happens during the summer, which in theory, if that were the case, could build in quite a bit of weather premium into new crop as we go on. But if all of a sudden now it's, only 30% chance La Nina, and it's more likely 70%, it's going to happen in the fall. Not as much weather premium built into that market. So we'll see what happens. It doesn't mean it can't happen, but if we do get La Nina in the Northern Hemisphere, in North America, I don't know how that would affect South America, but, during the fall and winter, that is their, that would be their critical growing time. I mean, if weather developments would happen down in South America, that would actually be probably beneficial for the North American farmer.
That's, if you're a U.S. farmer listening to this, that's really, now we've gone globally with what you want as far as droughts. Before it might have been you and Iowa, and then your fellow farmers in Illinois, you kind of not hope they drought, but you hope they have a little bit of an issue to give you some premium. In this case, in this world environment we live in, you could have the U.S. have a great crop and have Brazil fail, South America, Argentina fail, and we all win on the U.S. side. So I think that's kind of best case scenario for producers. It's hard to really project a big rally right now with what wheat's been doing. Very boring market at this point, but wheat continues to toil lower. European markets weighing heavily without really feels like zero buyers out there.
Yeah. So I think that just about does it for grains. We want to quickly go into cattle here.
Yeah, sure. Cattle markets have been, I'd say, on fire the last couple of days, but certainly recovering after the sell-off from last week. You've got feeder cattle pushing up above 155, and you've got the that April fat contract, which I know you and I both have been watching from a trading perspective, pushing on that 135. Any thoughts, Tim? Maybe we get a little bit higher here before folks look to put them on grass?
Yeah, so you basically, when we – April cattle has been kind of the near month for hedgers or traders just kind of looking to sell what's going on in the market now. That 135 level is significant with the trend line coming down. So for producers, the ranchers I talk to, or anyone in the industry looking to sell cattle in April, they've been using 135 as a starting point just because of that technical resistance. Depending on what goes on in the cash market, a lot of them think, maybe you can trade between that 135 to 140 as an upward trend where, in the upward part of the range when they're thinking maybe, if cash prices collapse and things really come down, maybe we're looking at 120, 125 as the lower part of the range. So that's what I hear from a lot of the guys who are out there, doing it for a living. In terms of May feeders, strictly as a, from a tactical standpoint, if you look at a May feeder chart, that 148 area really started to form a short-term base, and as soon as it broke out, I think a lot of the short-term funds basically got in based on some short-term technical triggers. So resistance is going to be 158 in May feeders. Support's going to be 148. 10 points in feeders, $5,000 a contract. That's a pretty big range to be, to be trading in May feeders. So if you do that, watch out. I prefer April live cattle for anyone who's looking to spec. But, and I think that's really what's been going on. Otherwise than that, not a whole lot going on in the cattle market.
Yeah, we did fill some technical gaps today on the April contract from a gap lower a couple of weeks back. I've been using the 100-day exponential moving average on our DT Pro. Not perfect, but it certainly does a good job just defining the trend lines. And that 135 level, like you said, on the April fats, signifies a pretty good sell point for folks if you're looking to hedge summer needs. Obviously, depending on demand, I think, the way the stock market's been trading. You might see cattle burn a little bit higher if you see stocks recover more. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, we're seeing the cattle crop 2% bigger than we were a year ago. So it'd be difficult, I think, a stretch to see the market trade above that 144 high. But, anything's possible. I think you'd need a shakeup in the grain markets and to have it happen. So other than that.
You make a good point there with the outside markets, by the way, where if the stock markets and the global markets continue to get some strength and recover, cattle can go higher. And I think, we were talking a little bit earlier on this podcast on, why exactly do the grains rally? The global markets and the U.S., stock market got better too. So I wouldn't discount that, just to get maybe, kind of a rising tide lifts all boats kind of deal. Sure. Because those commodities had been, especially, the livestock and the grains had been under a lot of pressure, now in terms of the macro markets, we're looking at the yen, trading in a range probably between 85 and 89. The euro is stabilized now. We're looking like we might be in a range between 110.5 to, almost 114. Crude seems to be putting in some kind of a bottom here. And then you see these reports from OPEC and plus Russia. I know we've talked about this in the past, John, and I write about this too, is, the one thing you need to watch for in crude is if Saudi Arabia and Russia ever get together and say we're going to start cutting production, because they are by far the two largest producers. And what did we hear yesterday and today is how Saudi Arabia and Russia, they haven't said anything definite, but they're now talking about, putting caps in on current production and things like that if other OPEC nations go along. To me, that's the first – that's kind of like, when you heard the Fed the other day talk about the possibility of negative interest rates, and then everyone's like, whoa, step back. Are we going to – is the Fed going to completely now do a 180, or are things worse than we thought? The same thing with, crude. As soon as Saudi Arabia and Russia are talking about, capping production, they are the two countries that really can matter in this whole thing. So that'll be interesting to see, if crude stabilizes here in those low 20s and high 30, and basically high 20s and low 30s, and what that means for the stock market. I think that, the E-mini S&P now is breaking through support level, resistance levels on the upside too from the recent downturn. So the macro markets, whether it be the currencies, crude, the stock markets, all seem to be stabilizing now. And you're hearing a lot better things, especially of the crude market and from some of the central banks. So I think that could be, if that continues, that could be positive for the grain markets.
Don't you think that that all this negative interest rate talk is bullish commodities longer term?
I would like to think so. I do. I think, if we do have negative interest rates, I would think it just, in my mind, what it does is it just kind of weakens confidence in currency, and you just rather one have commodities overall. So whether it be metals or grains, I'm not an expert on interest rates, but you hear negative interest rates and you're just like, what's going on? Is there a huge problem going on behind the scenes that we don't know about? And that's why that'd be my one thing where it's like, at that point you'd almost be like, don't want to have anything in cash. There's no reason to have, so you put it in assets. And that's really kind of the point when, I don't know if everyone knows this, but when people say, when the banks say, negative interest rates, a lot of the time it's based on a tier structure where, the banks have to have certain amount of capital on hand just to, be liquid enough for loans and things like that. And then there's a second tier where, they can have excess. And then there's a third tier where the central banks say, listen, you're hoarding money now and you're not lending out and you're not letting the rest of the market take on risk, and get money for capital projects and stuff like that. And that's the money you see basically have the negative interest rates on. And what it's basically the central banks are telling the commercial banks is stop holding that money. I'm going to charge you for it, or you can get your people to go out and find, relative projects that would make sense from an economic growth, standpoint. So I don't know. That's how I kind of get it. We're in a little bit of new territory here with it. That's how I understand it. But to me, it's just another way, reason not to keep your money in cash and either put it into equities, bonds, or commodities.
Exactly. I think just to piggyback a little bit on where Craig was and what it there would be that really since the Federal Reserve kind of indicated that they would be raising rates, it took the value of holding a commodity out of everybody's hands. you look at some of these foreign countries like Argentina, where they were holding soybeans because it wasn't because they couldn't flip them into cash. They didn't want to flip them into cash. Mm-hmm. You know, it's we're all conditioned to say, well, we're going to do something. We're going to grow X. You know, we're going to grow X market to then sell it so that I can take in dollars. Well, if those dollars are becoming worthless, you just simply kind of barter the physical, or you hold out as long as you can. So
right,
you I would say for everybody who's looking at the fundamental side of things, we all know, Craig and I look at this stuff every day. We both can tell you that if we grow the number of bushels that we think we can grow and the number of acres that's priced in, this thing could easily fall. But we both have been doing this too long to know that the currency is maybe one of the bigger drivers of this, and that's unpredictable. So for everybody out there who looks at fundamentals like we do, we got to keep that in mind.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and here's the deal. Let's say, I think one of the banks, I cannot remember which one it was. It was over the wire today. One of the banks, I don't know if it was JP Morgan or Citi or Goldman, someone put a chance of a U.S. recession at 50-50 now. You know, if the United States goes into recession, which I don't think it will, but if it does, then, you know, what's the Federal Reserve going to do? They're going to have to start easing again. And you know what? That means the dollar comes down, and, you know, that makes our exports more attractive. And, you know, there's a good chance that the grain markets go higher. So in the United States, so it's a great point, John, and it's something we all have to watch.
Sorry, I put myself on mute there. Yeah, so that'll basically be it for next week. We'll have Ag Forum, and then the week, 2 weeks after that, we'll have the USDA WASD. Just scanning down the Forex headlines here, and there isn't a lot of data. China's off until really the end of the month, so it'll be probably more weather watching and you know, crude inventory report watching, and just watching that stock market fly around.
Yep, absolutely. So good. It was a good podcast. Hope everyone enjoyed it, and we'll talk again next week.
Absolutely, Craig. Thanks for joining me today. For Craig Turner, this is John Payne. This is Inside Commodity Futures. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you next week.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.